welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. Great to be with you today. And for the second hour of today's show, I'm bringing you the audio from an ABC documentary, Heart of the Matter, which was shown on a program called Catalyst last year. And as I mentioned in the first hour, this has caused huge controversy and has led to the ABC being disciplined because they've actually done their job and they've actually exposed some very, very important information. The shows have actually been scrubbed from the ABC's own website. They are currently on YouTube, but I do expect that they will be scrubbed from YouTube in due course as well, because this is material that the industry does not want the general public to know about. So I'm actually going to play to you in today's second hour, the whole two episodes, if I can fit them in. This is very, very important material, and if perhaps you're driving and you haven't had a chance to listen to this, now is your opportunity. But I will be providing the links to the full documentary on the show notes of the website. So here, without further ado, is ABC Catalyst, Heart of the Matter, and part one is titled Dietary Villains. And this is an expose of the so-called cholesterol-inducing foods that have been vilified in the media for several decades.
For the last four decades, dietary fat and cholesterol have been the villains in heart disease.
You very seldom see the word saturated fat in the public press when they're not associated with artery clogging. So it's like it's all one term, artery clogging saturated fat.
But now some medical experts are coming forward to challenge this medical paradigm.
I think it's a huge misconception that saturated fat and cholesterol are the demons in the diet, and it is 100% wrong.
Saturated fat has been vilified for years because of the cholesterol theory.
A multi-billion dollar food industry has fueled our phobia of fat and cholesterol and dramatically influenced our diet.
That's not science, that's marketing.
It's lived past its expiration date, and it's one of these hypotheses that just won't die.
Have we all been conned? In this episode, I'll follow the road which led us to believe that saturated fat and cholesterol cause heart disease and reveal why it's been touted as the biggest myth in medical history. The food industry has shaped our ideas about heart health with TV ads like this one.
So join me in the Uncle Toby's Oats Cholesterol Challenge!
Lowering our cholesterol has been a running theme with the food industry.
People have this fear of cholesterol because they've been bombarded with it so much in the media that it's bad and it's going to cause heart disease. That's why all these things are emblazoned with cholesterol-free.
These advertising campaigns are at the behest of our peak health authorities.
The National Heart Foundation guidelines are pretty clear. We're told to reduce our saturated fat and cholesterol levels in order to reduce our risk of heart disease. But many doctors are now suggesting we need to radically rethink this approach.
One of those doctors challenging this medical dogma is California-based nutritionist Dr. Johnny Bowden.
When you look at the data, it's very clear everything that we have been told about saturated fat and cholesterol is a bold-faced lie. It's just not so.
But isn't there good science behind this?
If you look at the science that actually the dietary guidelines were based on, the early stuff was so badly done and so filled with confirmation bias, it would never even pass muster today. And unfortunately, most doctors don't know this.
Dr. Ernest Curtis is astonished at how medicine has gilded the lily on cholesterol.
During medical school, I was taught the same thing everybody else was, the importance of cholesterol and so forth, and I saw no reason to doubt it. But once I got into the cardiology field itself, I was seeing people with heart attacks that had cholesterol all over the place, high cholesterol, low cholesterol, the middle, it didn't seem to matter. And at first I thought, well, okay, these are probabilities, so there'll be exceptions. But it turned out that after a while I was seeing far too many exceptions, so that motivated me to go back and look at the origins of these theories. And quite frankly, given the certainty with which we were taught this, it surprised me to find out how poor the evidence was, virtually non-existent.
Cardiologist Dr. Stephen Sinatra said he routinely ordered patients to lower their cholesterol with medications, but now admits he was wrong.
I used to be the poster boy for the drug companies, and when I was chief of cardiology, I used to write for statins all the time. I really believed in the cholesterol theory of heart disease. I first became skeptical of the cholesterol theory in like the mid-80s. I was doing coronary angiograms, and you know, you place a tube in the groin, and goes up into the heart, and you can see if this blockage is there. So sometimes I would do the angiogram on a person with a high cholesterol, thinking I was going to find a lot of disease, and many times I didn't find disease. And the converse was true. You know, I would do somebody with a low cholesterol and expecting not to find disease, and I found disease. So I was starting to think, maybe I don't have this right. Maybe cholesterol is not the enemy we think it is.
About cholesterol, we've actually forgotten it's essential for life. It's a major component of brain and nerve tissue and central for the production of hormones. In fact, it's so important that virtually every single cell in the body makes it. Aside from people with a genetic condition like familial hypercholesterolemia, diet has long been the focus of how we can lower our cholesterol. The idea that saturated fat clogs your arteries by raising cholesterol first gained traction in the 50s. American nutritionist Ansel Keys became intrigued with the soaring rates of heart disease after World War II.
The facts are simple. You know the chief killer of Americans is cardiovascular disease.
He compared the rates of heart disease and fat consumption in six countries. It was almost a perfect correlation. The more fat people ate, the higher the rates of heart disease. Except there was just one problem. Keyes withheld data for 16 other countries. Later, when researchers plotted all 22 countries, the correlation wasn't so perfect. Dr. Michael Eads is critical of the way Ansel Keys excluded countries that didn't fit his hypothesis.
He more or less cherry-picked countries. You could show just the opposite. You could show that the more saturated fat people ate, the less heart disease they had if you cherry-picked the right countries.
Dr. Eads says that even if fat consumption trends in the same direction as heart disease, it doesn't prove anything.
Just because there's a correlation doesn't mean that there's causation. It's like people who are fat have big belts, but that doesn't mean that if you go and buy a smaller belt, you won't be fat. I mean, that's not causation. You know, that's what these observational studies show, is just a correlation.
The classic study by Ansel Keys is a textbook example of fudging the data to get the result that you want out of a study. And unfortunately, there's a lot of that that goes on.
Science writer Gary Taubes says it's all very well to have a theory, but in science, you have to prove it. And they tried.
And over the next 15 years, researchers did trial after trial, and there were probably a half a dozen of them between 1960 and 1975, all refuted or failed to confirm the idea that you could live longer by either reducing the saturated fat in your diet or reducing the total fat in your diet.
The American Heart Association was also reluctant to lend credence to Keyes' theory. But then he managed to score a position on the association's advisory panel, where he pushed for the acceptance of his ideas. And it wasn't long before they had a change of heart.
Instead of the data not being good enough to claim that dietary fat was a cause of heart disease, they concluded that the data were good enough, and therefore all Americans over the age of 2 should go on low-fat diets.
As the idea gained widespread acceptance with the public, science was left to catch up. Two ambitious trials costing over $250 million involving hundreds of thousands of patients both failed to prove that lowering saturated fat could reduce your risk of dying from a heart attack.
The way the authorities responded to this was to claim that they must have done the study wrong. Instead of saying, hey, look, eating a low-fat diet doesn't apparently do anything for people, or certainly not women, instead they respond by putting out press releases saying, look, we don't know why this trial failed to confirm our hypothesis, but it doesn't mean that the advice we've been giving you is wrong, and it doesn't mean that the hypothesis that dietary fat causes heart disease is wrong.
The National Heart Foundation of Australia defends these failures, saying that nutrition trials are just too complex.
When you ask that question of, do dietary fats increase heart disease, you're trying to negate all the other risk factors that in fact actually also cause heart disease. So to imagine creating a study that would prove that conclusively, it's virtually impossible.
So if they can't prove it, on what basis have they decided that saturated fat is bad for us?
Eat too much fatty food and you risk a high level of blood cholesterol building up in your arteries. Eat sensibly.
Meta-analyses have in fact actually shown that, you know, we can say with convincing evidence that intake of saturated fats leads to an increase in blood cholesterol.
An extensive review of the literature showed the data was highly inconsistent. In fact, there were many long-term studies that refute the idea that saturated fat raises cholesterol. So I approached the National Heart Foundation for further evidence. They said the data was complex. They cited one study which showed only certain types of saturated fat could raise bad cholesterol, but it also raised good cholesterol. In the end, they concluded, "We agree, we are limited by the evidence base available at this time."
Study called the Interheart Study.
I asked Australia's leading lipid expert what he thought.
So should we be giving people dietary advice if there is such poor adherence and the studies aren't available?
I think there are some very telling pieces of evidence which have been used to establish the importance of avoiding saturated fat. If saturated fat is completely benign, if it's actually beneficial, where's the evidence in support of that? Where's the evidence of an alternative cause? And we are particularly keen to get some dietary advice because otherwise, what do we offer people?
But Dr. Curtis disagrees with giving people dietary advice when he believes the evidence is insufficient. He says diet has very little influence on your blood cholesterol in the long term.
The reason for that is that your body manufactures 80 to 90% of your cholesterol. Really, very little of it comes from the diet. Most people seem to have a genetically preset level for the cholesterol in their body, and it may be in a range. But they're generally going to seek to stay within that range. So if somebody cuts all the cholesterol out of their diet, their body will simply start making a little bit more to bring it back up into the range.
In the 60s, British physician John Neutkin challenged Key's theory, claiming that sugar was the culprit in heart disease, not saturated fat.
We're just heading to break. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, and I'm playing to you some clips from an ABC documentary, The Heart of the Matter, which questions the association of cholesterol with heart disease. We'll be right back after the short break. Don't go away. You're listening to Truth News Radio Australia, going beyond the spin, deception and propaganda of mainstream news. Visit truthnews.com.au. and subscribe now. Welcome back, you're with Truth News Radio. And in today's show, I'm playing to you some clips from ABC documentary The Heart of the Matter, which questions the association of cholesterol with heart disease and also goes on to do some really good expose on the misuse of the anti-cholesterol, cholesterol-lowering drugs known as statins. And I'm going to actually play to you from the second episode in the documentary now, because we don't have time to include both episodes in the time available. And the second episode, I believe, is the more important one, because it really does challenge the dogmas of the pharmaceutical industry. And this is the one that caused the backlash, with a lot of people actually changing their medication choices as a result of the information that's provided. But, of course, it was all backed up by really good expert advice. And, you know, this has been touted as being a big problem. And they've said, oh, well, ABC's breached its guidelines and, you know, it's breached its impartiality guidelines. Well, they've done some research and they found some information. I believe it's very important. So I'm actually going to play to you from the second episode now, but I do encourage you to go back and watch the rest of the first episode. We will have the YouTube links on the website. I can't guarantee how long they will continue to function, though, so I do suggest you download the full copy of those episodes as soon as you possibly can. But now I'll just continue playing to you from The Heart of the Matter, and this is part two, the part where they really get into questioning the use of the drugs and also the dangers associated with the drugs. These drugs, these statin drugs, are not safe. They've got a number of risks involved, and when you combine that with the evidence that they don't actually necessarily even work, that they don't actually reduce your risk of heart disease, it is quite a scandal. So let's, and of course, they're one of the most heavily prescribed drugs on the earth. I think they've produced more profits than any other class of drugs because they're so widely used. So continuing now from ABC Catalyst's documentary, The Heart of the Matter, Part 2.
We've been told that medications to lower cholesterol will save lives.
We repeatedly hear from patients that their doctors tell them, if you don't take this, you will die.
Over 40 million people worldwide take drugs to lower their cholesterol. But now there's evidence that the majority of them won't benefit.
None of those people are less likely to die.
I speak to doctors accusing the drug companies of distorting the evidence about the drug's side effects.
Of course they're going to try to minimize the adverse events because that will increase the sales of their drugs.
In its effect, it's certainly scientific fraud, and in its effect, it's organized crime.
So how do these drugs work, and are they really safe? I've come to the United States to investigate how drugs to lower cholesterol came to be the most widely prescribed drugs in the history of medicine. The 80s saw the debut of a new weapon in the battle against heart disease, a novel class of drugs called statins that lowered cholesterol like no other medication before them.
They were heralded as nirvana, the next great thing, because all of a sudden now you're getting 30 to 40% reduction with statins, which was huge. And this was great news to the people who were pushing the cholesterol theory, because they said, aha, now we don't have to settle for these piddling little amounts anymore. We can really show how important cholesterol is by knocking it way down.
Medical information comes along that says you may need to get...
In the U.S., influential TV ads like this use popular actors to boast the enormous potential of these drugs.
Crestor, along with diet, can lower bad cholesterol by up to 52%.
But the reality is, lowering your cholesterol with medication doesn't guarantee you won't have a heart attack.
The marketing concentrates on the fact that you can lower your cholesterol as if that was the end in itself, which it is not. Cholesterol is just a lab number. You know, who cares about lowering cholesterol unless it actually translates into a benefit to patients?
Over the decades, drug companies have had an enormous vested interest in statin drugs.
It's the most profitable group of drugs in the history of the world. Something like 15 to 25 billion with a B dollars per year spent on these drugs. That's higher than the gross national product of many countries around the world.
Lipitor is the best-selling drug in history. So in terms of costs, total sales of Lipitor have been in the range of $140 billion since it came on the market in 1996.
Statins work by disabling a critical step early in the formation of cholesterol.
There's a pathway that produces cholesterol in the body. You can think of it like a tree. So we have decided collectively that one of the branches of this tree is bad, meaning cholesterol. So we've decided that the best way to get rid of that branch is to cut the tree off at the root.
Statins inhibit this enzyme, which is also required for essential molecules like coenzyme Q10. Nutritionist Dr. Johnny Bowden says CoQ10 is essential for optimal heart muscle function.
This is partly, we believe, why so many side effects have to do with lack of energy, muscle pain, because coenzyme Q10 is so vital. So what's the irony of giving people a drug to reduce something that probably doesn't even have that much to do with heart disease that also reduces one of the molecules that's most necessary for heart health? How insane is that?
It's assumed that cholesterol is a toxic substance in your body, and getting it as low as you can is a good thing. Well, cholesterol is the organic molecule that's most common in your brain by weight. It's in every cell wall. It's the precursor of many of the hormones in our bodies. It's an enormously complex molecule. And to think that you can radically pull this out of the body and not have consequences is just, it's ridiculous. It's such bad science.
It's been about 30 years since statins were first introduced as the new blockbuster drug in heart disease, and millions of people around the world are being prescribed these medications. But many are concerned that the benefits of these drugs have been grossly exaggerated.
Professor Rita Redberg is a world-renowned cardiologist. She says barring a genetic condition, the only people who live longer by taking a statin are those that have already had a heart attack or stroke.
Valve's working great.
That's good.
Yeah.
And of them, only a very small number will benefit.
One or two people in 100 will benefit from taking a statin. What people don't understand is that means the other 98 will get no benefit at all. It's not going to reduce their chance of dying.
But this hasn't limited their use. These drugs are now being widely prescribed to relatively healthy people, those without diagnosed heart disease. And Dr. Redberg warns most of them won't benefit.
For healthy people, even people that have a lot of risk factors, so they might have high blood pressure, they might smoke, they might have diabetes, the data is not there to suggest that those people are better off taking a statin. No, I don't think it's a wonder drug.
What's your chance of a heart attack or stroke?
But Dr. David Sullivan disagrees. He says all risk factors should be considered equally, including cholesterol.
If you want to mount these arguments about not treating the cholesterol, you've got to take the responsibility of saying it's not necessary to treat these other risk factors either. I would certainly encourage people who are considering cessation of treatment for perceived side effects and so forth to discuss it with their doctor.
In 2012, there was an interesting turn of events. The CTT collaboration, a highly regarded group of researchers, reanalyzed all of the old data with different methods and concluded that statins were effective for the wider population. The report was subject to harsh criticism, but it's still the data that many cardiologists turn to. The media jumped on board and reported that everyone over the age of 50 should be taking a statin to reduce their risk of heart disease, even if you had normal cholesterol. But Professor Redberg says there's a downside.
None of those people are less likely to die. So you can take a statin for many, many years, and you're just as likely to die as if you had not taken a statin.
Unless you've already been diagnosed with heart disease, then taking a statin won't help you live longer. It may reduce your risk of a cardiovascular event, but it may also increase your risk of developing something else, like...
We're just going to break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. I'm playing to you documentary made by ABC, that's the Australian Broadcasting Corporation, a very important piece of research exploiting the myths about cholesterol and the use of statin drugs. We're going to break. We'll be right back. Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. And I'm going to continue playing now the documentary from ABC, The Heart of the Matter. Very, very interesting, very important, very incisive investigative journalism about a topic that no one should be misinformed on. Heart disease is a very, very significant problem in the world, especially in the Western developed world, especially in Australia, the US, Europe, the UK. For reasons which are not fully understood, it is much less of a problem in Asia. But one problem we do have in these countries of the West is the massive overprescription of so many different pharmaceutical drugs. And as we saw there before the break in the documentary, the drugs have now been touted as being so good that people even who don't have heart disease, who are perfectly healthy, should start taking these drugs. Well, this is clearly an agenda that is driven by the profit motive, and it needs to be exposed. So I'll return you now to the documentary from the ABC.
Unless you've already been diagnosed with heart disease, then taking a statin won't help you live longer. It may reduce your risk of a cardiovascular event, but it may also increase your risk of developing something else, like diabetes. Either way, taking a statin won't extend your lifespan. Dr. Abramson says cardiologists are so focused on how these drugs prevent blood vessel disease, they often overlook the other problems caused by statins.
People are more than their cardiovascular system. And what we really want to do is improve people's overall health, longevity, and their risk of serious illness. If you look at overall health, we haven't done anything for them. Now, do people want to take a statin to trade one cardiovascular event for some other very serious illness, in other words, no net benefit, and expose themselves to the risk of harm from the statins? Do you want to do that? I think it's a bad deal. If somebody has a particular fear of heart disease and says, look, I don't care if I get diabetes. I don't care if I have muscle symptoms. I don't care if I can't exercise the way I want to exercise. I do not want to have heart disease. Fine, take a statin. But understand that that's why you're taking a statin, not because it's going to improve your overall health.
Cardiologist Dr. Ernest Curtis says the absolute benefit of statins is so minor that it's unlikely to be because of their ability to lower cholesterol. He says statins probably work through other mechanisms.
It seems very likely that the amount of reduction that they saw with the statin agents could easily be due to its effect on the blood clotting and possibly even the anti-inflammatory effect and have nothing to do with the cholesterol.
Dr. Gallom has scrutinized the data, and she's even more skeptical about the value of these drugs, especially in women.
Right now, the evidence has not supported benefit to women, even if they have heart disease, in terms of mortality and all-cause morbidity. It has not shown benefit to elderly, even if they have heart disease. In fact, in the 4S trial, there was a 12% increase in mortality in the women in that group who were assigned to statin rather than placebo. So the evidence really doesn't support that the benefit is the same for women and for men. And on top of that, women are at higher risk of complications from statins.
Should women take cholesterol-lowering medication?
In general, no. Now, there may be exceptions. Medicine actually does have an element of art. And if women are from a family with severe familial hyperlipidemia, where a lot of people are dying from heart disease in their 30s and 40s, that's a group where I would say there is an art.
There are now calls for patients to give written consent before taking a statin.
If you do plan to give statins to women, to elderly, to people at low risk, they should sign a consent form saying they understand that they're receiving a drug that will not extend their life, but will only shift the cause of death. I think patients have a right to know that before they agreed to take on a medication.
The National Heart Foundation of Australia agrees that people are being prescribed statins unnecessarily.
I would agree that there are people in Australia today who are being treated for cholesterol where their cardiovascular risk is not high, and you would have to question whether they should in fact actually be on that.
A report estimated around 75% of people taking statins are in the low to moderate risk category. And according to these researchers, that means up to 30 million people are taking a drug that won't offer them the benefit of living any longer.
My doctor pointed out that my cholesterol levels were high and I should take some sort of medication to reduce the cholesterol level.
There was nothing wrong with Edward's health, apart from his high cholesterol. He took his doctor's advice and began taking a statin.
After about 2 weeks, I was having a difficult time walking in the daytime, and at night I had trouble sleeping. My legs ached. I was definitely experiencing a memory loss. I didn't feel that I could recall things as clearly as I did before I was taking the statin. Mm.
Statins have a long list of side effects like muscle weakness, memory loss, and in rare cases, a potentially fatal condition called rhabdomyolysis, where muscles break down and cause kidney failure. Edward decided to stop taking his medication.
I start feeling better after about 3 weeks to maybe a month afterwards.
How long did it take for you to get 100% improvement?
100% better took, from the time I stopped taking the statins, took 6 months.
They feel like they're in a fog. They can't get out of their chair. Side effects that go away when they've stopped their statins. And I have patients come in and tell me they'd rather be dead than keep taking the statin.
Some of them tell us that their doctors fire them as patients if they discontinue their statins, which I really wonder about the ethics of. Some of the people that we hear from also say that their doctor didn't believe them, that their problem couldn't be due to statins, and based on how patients perceive it, badger or bully them into resuming or continuing the medication. That's not an acceptable way for medicine as a system to be run.
But Dr. Sullivan says it's possible that patients talk themselves into having side effects.
In alerting patients to some undesirable possibilities, and in fact maybe even through the power of suggestion lead them to believe that they're experiencing those particular issues, which they would then blame on the drug, when in fact it might be arising from other factors.
Their imagination?
Look, I'd be reluctant to... I don't think a lot of these things aren't imagined. I think there are days when you can feel more of a muscle ache than others, and it can be age, it can be all sorts of other things.
Dr. Gallom makes a stunning accusation about why she believes some doctors in the US may push their patients to take statins.
I think they often intentionally hide those risks because there are often physician incentives that benefit the physician for having more patients on statins. So it pits physician self-interest against patient benefit. This particular woman contacted me, and she had left the practice that she was at because they insisted that at least, I believe it was 80% of her patients be on statins. This has actually been written up in media as something that is actually considered legal and acceptable. I can't see any way in which that's acceptable. I'm literally the only researcher I know who studies this class of drugs who has a policy not to take money from industry.
statins are meant to be lifelong medications, but Dr. Curtis says we don't know about the long-term side effects.
The studies that have been done have generally been just a few years in duration. The long-term effects may not show up for many years. It may take many years for a cancer that develops to make itself manifest. Because cholesterol is so important in the brain, could it contribute to dementia when someone gets older if you lower their cholesterol? We don't know. Again, how would we be able to tie that to the drug? So all of these concerns about the unknown long-term side effects are very serious, in my opinion.
Harvard doctor John Abramson is an expert in litigation involving drug companies. He says we're not being told the whole truth about the dangers of these drugs.
We're told over and over again that statins are extremely safe. And when you look at the results of the clinical trials, you would conclude that they are safe. The problem is that the clinical trials are not designed to pick up all the side effects.
You're listening to a documentary from the ABC, Heart of the Matter, Part 2. And I'll be returning to that when we return from the break. This is Truth News Radio Australia. I'm Herewood Fenton, and we have one more segment of the show. I do hope you're enjoying this documentary. I think it's extremely interesting, very, very important. We'll be right back. With Truth News Radio Australia. And I'm going to continue playing the documentary here from ABC, Heart of the Matter. We won't be able to get to the end of it. We'll probably get about two-thirds of the way through. So I do encourage you to have a look on our website to play the whole thing, and you'll be able to see the video as well, which will help you to understand it. I believe it's a very important contribution to the body of alternative information about health generally. So, without further ado, we'll continue with ABC's Heart of the Matter.
The CTT collaboration, for example, use mostly drug company data and report very low levels of muscle side effects from statins. But when you look at the side effects in the general population, it's 100 times higher.
Are the trials lying? No. I just don't think they ask the right questions. Why didn't they ask the right questions? It's not in the interest of the drug companies to ask the right questions. So it's creating the impression that the drugs are safe.
Another complication with clinical trials is that drug companies don't recruit volunteers that reflect the typical patient on statins.
The problem with the study design is that we exclude people with chronic disease or other comorbidities. We exclude people who are very old or very young, and we'll certainly exclude people with other types of risk factors or diseases that may interfere with the metabolism of the drug. So we often get a skewed picture of what the side effect profile is.
The fraction of people with problems in my sort of real world on multiple medications, et cetera, clinic is far higher. And I would say in that sample, it really seems on the order of a third of patients that develop problems.
There are a lot of ways that one can manipulate data in a trial. Trials do what they call a washout period. And what that means is before they choose the people that are going to be in the trial, they give everybody the drug, and the people that have side effects get excluded from the trial. And they say that so people aren't uncomfortable when they're in the trial. But of course, it takes out all the people that have side effects, and that's very commonly done in drug trials.
So the side effects would be grossly underestimated?
Yes, it would definitely grossly underestimate the number of people that have side effects. They're not as safe as they've made out to be, no.
In its effect, it's certainly scientific fraud, And it's a fact, it's organized crime. It's always difficult to allege intent. But it is clear that manipulation of evidence subjects many people to treatments that those people should never have been subjected to.
I think there is criminal activity that goes on. And I think when drug companies act in ways that misrepresent information that leads to harm, they ought to be held responsible, just like any other individual or organization that conducts itself in a way that leads to harming other people.
Drug companies have a history of illegal activity. This is just a sample of the billions of dollars in fines they incur for things like fraud and bribery in any given year. In the 80s, when President Reagan came into office and slashed funding to the National Institutes of Health, it left a gaping hole for private industry to move in. Nowadays, around 85% of trials are funded by drug companies. A review concluded that if a drug company paid for a trial, it was 24% more likely to report the drug was effective, and 87% less likely to report the drug's side effects.
There is a sense that science is science, so it doesn't matter who pays for it. And yet, because the research is privatized, the fundamental purpose for which it's conducted has changed. It's not to improve the public's health. It's to fulfill the fiduciary obligations of the sponsors and create an opportunity to maximize profits instead of improve the public's health.
Some might say that that's a rather cynical view of how science works.
To say it's cynical that commercial sponsorship of science taints the science is just totally naive. It's silly. Business is in business. Their job is to make money. We ought to be clear in our public discourse that to say we've got a bias in commercially sponsored research is neither cynical nor paranoid nor impolite. It's a fact. So let's just accept it as a fact and stop being naive at our own expense.
But if Big Pharma doesn't pay, it will have to be the taxpayer.
A drug now costs about $2 billion to develop. The success rate of drugs is very low. You know, is the public purse going to be willing to shell out in advance for $2 billion for a drug which it doesn't know the likely outcome of?
Arguably, the biggest ethical issue in science is that drug companies withhold unflattering results. So in the end, what we're presented with is a distortion of the data.
Two of the three major drug companies declined to comment. AstraZeneca denied these allegations, stating that all their trials are publicly available. But in 2010, the drug maker reportedly paid $500 million to settle a class action after being accused of burying information about the increased risk of diabetes seen with their widely prescribed antipsychotic drug, Seroquel.
I spend a lot of time as an expert in pharmaceutical litigation. And one thing you learn is that you can't possibly know what's going on with that drug unless you have access to the corporate hard drives. If you want to know the truth about a drug, you need to have subpoena power or, in litigation, discovery that gets you into those corporate hard drives. Because without getting into the corporate hard drives, it's impossible to know what the real benefits and the real risks of those drugs are.
Even the definition of high cholesterol keeps changing. In 2004, a US panel of experts decided to lower the threshold of cholesterol, which sparked outrage among many doctors.
More and more people think they have high cholesterol, even though they don't have high cholesterol.
By changing the definition, it meant that millions more people became eligible for statins, and these thresholds were adopted by many countries around the world.
Has this been on the basis of any scientific data? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. No evidence whatsoever. Just the theory that less is better. You're creating more patients. you're creating more people who now have something to worry about where they didn't have anything before.
But Dr. Sullivan insists this was a good decision.
I think what we actually started off with was maybe appropriately conservative targets, which were really not in the patient's best interest. So the likely outcome is a further reduction in targets.
More cholesterol lowering.
Yep, I think that's absolutely to be expected.
The decision to lower the threshold of cholesterol was a controversial one. An investigation into the matter revealed 8 out of 9 panel members had a direct conflict of interest after declaring financial ties to the companies that manufactured statins.
We don't have independent reviewers evaluating the data and making independent recommendations. You might ask, am I accusing these people of selling their opinion because they're getting paid by the drug companies? No, I'm not. I'm not accusing anybody of bad faith. But the people the drug companies choose to pay are people who advocate the use of their drugs and have standing and presence and reputation that will enhance the sales of their drugs.
So do drug companies seek out doctors to be their mouthpieces?
Drug companies clearly seek out what's called key opinion leaders. These are people with a national reputation who can create the street knowledge for practicing physicians that this is the way things should be done.
There is ample published literature showing that doctors who receive money from drug companies have more favorable attitudes and prescribing habits towards that drug.
There's no question that doctors are influenced by drug companies. I hate to say it, but drug reps showing up in nice suits and fancy women's clothes without much medical education play a significant role in what doctors think. Now, there's no reason for doctors to be getting their information from drug reps. My goodness. The drug rep's job is to increase the sales of the drugs they represent. Doctors need to take some responsibility. They need to do their best to get independent knowledge, and they need to put political pressure on their governments to get the clinical trial data unsealed so they can know what the clinical trials really showed.
I'm just going to have to leave it there. I'd like to say a few things about this documentary. One point to make is that this actually does give me hope, because I see a piece of research has been done that has a very high level of integrity. And I know I've said a lot of negative things about the ABC on this show over the years. And I've certainly accused the ABC of being involved in many propagandistic exercises. And so it gives me hope to see a program like this actually go to air with such incredibly challenging material in it. And I can well understand why there was such a reaction. Now, I have a page here from the ABC that is kind of their butt-covering mode, as you might call it. In October 2013, Catalyst aired a two-part program dealing with statins, cholesterol and heart disease. Following a number of complaints, the ABC's Independent Audience and Consumer Affairs Unit investigated the problems. While acknowledging the importance of public health issues and the contrasting opinions of highly qualified scientists, the Independent Consumer Affairs Unit has concluded that some parts of the program breached ABC standards and they have been removed from the ABC website. And there's links there to the full investigation and more details. And I'll be providing all that information as well on the Truth News Australia website. So I do hope you enjoyed our show today. We will be back next week with more incisive commentary and analysis, and I look forward to your company then. So that's over and out from Truth News Radio Australia.